Welcome back to Dark Florida. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and tonight's episode takes us deep into the Uwari National Forest, a place steeped in mystery and high strangeness. We're talking about a brand new documentary from Small Town Monsters, Bigfoot, the Monster of Morris Mountain. It's now streaming on YouTube, and it follows investigators Jesse and Joe Doyle of Hellbent Holler, along with local researcher Michael Kirkpatrick, as they uncover the legend of the Monster of Morris Mountain. Michael joins me tonight to share his own experiences, from his chilling Thunderbird encounter to a UFO sighting that left him questioning reality. We'll also dive into strange anomalies, Bigfoot legends, and even the possibility of portal activity deep in the forest. If you enjoy the show and want to keep up with everything Dark Florida, don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/darkflorida411. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And of course, if you've had your own strange encounter or would like to be a guest on the show, email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your story. And wherever you're listening, please be sure to drop a 5-star review. Now, dim the lights, grab your flashlight, and let's step into the woods because the monsters of Morris Mountain are waiting. Tonight, I am joined by the man himself, Mr. MK Ultra, aka Michael Kirkpatrick. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Brooke.
Yeah. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm currently kind of like the, I guess you call me like the head investigator for the Uwari area in North Carolina for Bigfoot and other high strangeness in that area. So I kind of just take in people's accounts, reports from there, and feed it over to my good buddies at Hellbent Holler.
So you kind of vet the stories first before passing things over?
Yeah, I'm used to just kind of sending them whatever weird stories that pop up in that area. I'll just go ahead and shoot it over to them. But I have a lot of friends that are hikers and like different recreations in that area. And anytime they have any weird recordings, they're sending it to me. Then I'll check with them if it's okay. Then I'll shoot it on over to them.
Well, I definitely want to get into maybe some of the weird things that you come across and the high strangeness in that area. But how did you even get involved with Bigfoot or any of this weird world?
I've always loved Bigfoot ever since I was a kid and seen In Search Of or Legend of Boggy Creek. So Bigfoot always kind of had like a pop culture imprint on me. I always thought it was cool. And growing up in Pennsylvania, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, just north of Johnstown, Altoona area, so like Cambria County. And it's just where the Chestnut Ridge ends up in there. And Stan Gordon was the main researcher in the area. And I remember him going on my local news broadcast whenever there was like a mass UFO sighting or a Bigfoot sighting. So it was always just something that was in my life growing up. And my family was always very open to all this stuff, too. They were always into UFOs, anything. So I always just took it in. But what really got me hooked was when I was 11 or 12, I was living in a place called Allport, Pennsylvania, and I went to go fishing in this pond that was out behind my house. And I'd go down there every day and go fishing with like a couple friends, maybe one or two, whoever was available. And I went down there and it was my buddy. I can't remember what his name was. I think it was like Matt. And we were sitting there on the embankment just with our fishing poles. And he wanted to go home and grab a different type of bait because there was this fish in the pond called Bob. It was just, it was the biggest largemouth bass. So whenever we saw him cruising on by, we go, okay, we got to go try to get Bob now. Yeah, because none of our kids' poles could handle him. He'd just snap them. It was fun times. So he goes running home to get this thing, and I'm just sitting there on the embankment, and it's probably like 4 or 5 feet up above the water line. I'm just minding my business. I'm watching him run across this field. I hear something right above my head. Even now, I can't describe the noise, but it was just kind of like a rush or like a rustle. And I look up, and I just see this huge silhouette, and it was a huge eagle silhouette. And it came right over me. Now, behind me was some young, like a tree line of like young saplings. And they were probably like 15 feet tall. So it was right above those saplings. And it came down and it came over the pond. And when it was over the pond, it was basically eye level with me on this embankment. So I got to watch it from the back flying away from me. And it was 25 foot wings. I mean, it was 25 foot wide. It was ugly brown bird, but definitely like an eagle. And it had a not pure white, but like a white tips on the edge of all of its wings. And then one a ring around its neck. And I watched it soar up from the pond And it did three distinct slow flaps, kind of this boom, boom. That was the only time I've ever seen it flap, but that's all it needed. It just like soared upwards until within a minute. It was, you couldn't tell any size or scale, but it just looked like an eagle. But I didn't know what it was. So I went to the library and I started looking up legends of lore around the area and giant birds. And I came across a Thunderbird, and there was like a perfect description of what I saw in one of these books. And that's where I was like, okay, there's things in this world that isn't what we're told. You know, there is still some magic left, I guess. And that was really kind of like the linchpin to make me like, I always believed in this stuff because I saw something that wasn't, it was something that I never expected. I didn't know anything about a Thunderbird before I saw that. But it was just this weird incident. And I always thought that it was kind of going after my friend running across the field. But then someone brought up, it went right over top of your head. It saw you sitting on the embankment by yourself. And it, you know, I'm thinking about it, it probably miscalculated the trees behind me and thought maybe I can get in between these two saplings. And then once it got close enough, it realized, okay, I'm not gonna be able to make it. And that's when it kind of went over me and skipped me. But I could have been, and that always made me think about like the missing 411 stuff. It all kind of added up to me like, oh yeah, like I could have been taken and no one would ever known.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're lucky that you didn't become a case study, because so often with those missing 411 cases, not only do people go missing seemingly out of nowhere, but it's like they're literally plucked from where they're sitting or standing or walking. So you're right. If this thing would have come over top of you and swooped down and gotten you.
Yeah. And then so that like a lot of the stuff is still connected. Like, yeah, like so that connected me with like missing 411. Then I start looking at what David Pilatus was on, and then a lot of things kind of intertwine.
Were there any missing 411 cases in that area?
I want to say that is near a cluster. It's not far from the Alleghenies, maybe like an hour or two drive north. But there's also the Black Mountains, I believe, is up there. And that's where there's a lot of Thunderbird sightings. There was actually one not too long ago in Dubois, which was a town that that was like the bigger town we go to. If I wanted to watch a movie, if it was like Independence Day came out, I went to Dubois and watched it in the duplex. So, but there was a report in Dubois like within a last couple of years. So like it's still something that's active up there. And yeah, I believe that whole area is in the cluster for missing 411.
Are Thunderbirds typically associated with sweep down and kidnap people, essentially?
Oddly enough, I actually got on a Discovery Channel kids show with this report. I had posted on an old website, might be still be up, called cryptozoology.com. I put my report down there. But I ended up going on a Discovery Channel children's show and then did the report. And there was another guy there that he was picked up. He was actually like attempted taking, and his mom came out and I guess chased it off. But he was just in his yard playing, and he was a little bit younger than me when I had my encounters, probably like 9 or 10, but still kind of same size kid, you know, running around in the yard. And I guess they had tried to pick him up, and the mom or the dad or somebody came out and like got him to drop him. So there is like some precedence before this about it picking up children and all that. And it goes back to the Native Americans. They claim that too. Another thing that goes with that from the Native end is that they also say that if you experience a Thunderbird, that the veil between this and the other world is thinner for you. Like it kind of like breaches something for you. So when people talk about like getting marked or something, I do look back on that. I wonder if that was something that marked me. Because from that point on, then stuff started racking up in my life in terms of other paranormal and supernatural kind of events.
And that's a concept that we've explored on here is, do you become a marked person after you have certain events happen to you? The veil might be thinner for those people who do experience this high strangeness, or maybe we are more in tune with the things happening around us. And I think depending on where you're at in life, you can honestly tune that dial and get more dialed in with what's going on.
You start getting kind of a feeling for things out of the norm, or maybe you even start just paying attention to more of these instincts that kind of start popping up instead of pushing them down. You kind of go, okay, what is this feeling I'm experiencing right now? Like you kind of, when you kind of embrace it, yeah, it does seem like that does affect the activity of what you're experiencing.
So I reached out to one of my cousins because I noticed the post she put up for our grandmother passing had mentioned Thunderbirds in it. And so I know my nanny had shared her Bigfoot sighting with me, but in the post, my cousin noted that my nanny would always warn her about the creature in the woods that would fly over you and to be careful. I wish that I would have known that when she was still here to kind of ask her some more questions on it. But yeah, it was a warning that she gave to one of my cousins.
Wow, that's really interesting. And it kind of like, I mean, it goes like these, they're reported all over the place, but like it kind of adds to that. Okay, well, she experienced a Thunderbird and then she also gets a Bigfoot experience in life too. Like it's a lot of like one in a million things happening here.
Yeah. Well, so that Thunderbird experience is what tipped you off into this world of high strangeness. You thought that maybe you became a marked person because you had other experiences happen to you in your life. What did this evolve into for you? What was the next paranormal or unexplainable thing that happened to you?
I've had like multiple, like I got a little bit of everything. The next big thing that I remember was a UFO sighting I had when I was in high school. I was leaving, I used to leave school early. We had a thing called like co-op, where if you had a job, you could leave a couple hours early to start your job. So I was heading out, and I don't think I was even working that day. So I think I was like skipping basically. But anyway, but I was driving, I was going to my friend's house, and it's just right around here. Like I don't live far from my school or anything. And I was going down this back road, and I looked up in the sky, and it was a perfectly, it was probably like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh no, I'll tell you, it was at 4:30 in the afternoon is when it was. So I was driving and I see this black cigar shape in the sky. And I go, wow, it's a UFO. I've heard of this. Like, okay, cool. I'm driving up to it and it's not high up. It's probably like from where I'm looking at, it's like 200 feet off the ground, 250. And so I'm driving down. It's just a 2-lane road. When I start getting closer, I realize it's not cigar shape. It's actually like a really fat triangle with very rounded edges. And I get almost underneath it. I end up actually getting freaked out and like slamming on my brakes on my truck because I was like, I didn't want to be directly underneath it where the tractor beam would get you. And I don't know how these rules work. I got out of the truck and I looked at it. Like I could see the paneling on it. I could see, to me, it looked man-made. And that's what struck me. I went from like thinking like UFO when it was cigar shaped. Then when I was actually looking at what the structure was, the skin looked like something you see on like a B-2 bomber or like a stealth bomber. It looked very man-made to me. Like if you stuck Air Force symbols on it, you'd go, okay, that's one of our things. But I looked into that and I guess something like that's called like a TR-3B. Which is like an experimental program. But I've seen some like people's eyewitness drawings that match up almost exactly to what I saw. And this thing just cruised right on over to me and cruised right over the road. And then I drove a little bit around to see if I could catch it on another road, but it was just gone. That was the last time I saw it. But it was right above the tree. And I would say it's probably the size of like a baseball diamond, maybe a little bit larger than that. Like maybe the actual like size of like the baseball diamond itself, not just the bases. Yeah. So that was the next one. And that one, I've always kind of believed in UFOs and aliens. So that one wasn't too shocking, I guess, outside of just being in the moment of it, being freaked out about it. But that was definitely the next one. And then it wasn't until a couple of years after that, I started having like what would be considered Sasquatch type activity. And that was when I was in a hiking at that point. That was probably another 12 years after that.
Well, I definitely want to get into that. But before we step away from this topic, do you think that this might have been some kind of reversed engineered craft from our government? Or do you lean towards it being a UFO, maybe our technology they were testing?
I feel like it is. I have no proof of this, but just looking at it, I don't know. I feel like it was just because of the paneling on it. Like I could see you know, and whenever I think of like alien spacecraft, I don't think of like steel paneling being riveted on. I didn't see rivets. I won't say that, but like, you know what I mean? Like right. It didn't look alien to me, like structurally wise. It was odd. It didn't make any noise. And there was these weird things in the corner where in a lot of the pictures I've seen people draw where there's lights at, I didn't see lights. I saw these kind of almost like a basketball in each corner, like a large half circle that was coming down off of it. But it wasn't a light. It was like, it had a weird texture to it, like a basketball, like some sort of, it was different than the paneling. It wasn't smooth. That has some sort of like texture on it. But that was the only thing that was different than what I've seen a lot of pictures of it was. Everywhere else I've seen. So I didn't know if that was over time. I've thought, is that like the drive engine then? Like if you take a picture of it, would that have been a light then or?
Right. Well, and you have the rare experience of seeing it during the day. A lot of UFO encounters happen at nighttime. So seeing it during the day gives it a completely different perspective.
Absolutely. That's what really shocked me was, and that's why the fear of aliens kind of went out way for me, because I was like, this is daylight. I'm looking at this thing broad daylight. It's 4:30 in the afternoon. Like, what is this thing like? And it's just cruising by. And part of me was like, do they not, like, is there some sort of cloaking technology that I thought was on? Because why am I like seeing this, you know, like why is it just floating so slow?
Did you happen to live by any military bases?
Bragg and Pope Air Force Base is where it's near me. So yeah, there's actually quite a few UFO reports in this area. A lot of it's probably is due to military aircraft, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on in Pope Air Force Base isn't no longer there. I think it's changed to like Bragg Airfield or something, but Fort Bragg's still very much there. And that's where Delta Force is off of. It's actually the second highest command, like military wise, in America. So it's the Pentagon and then it's Fort Bragg is like where the two top commanding fields. So you have a lot of stuff here. I've heard a lot of stories. There's stories of a secret tunnel that goes, it's for Delta Force, so they can get on base. Outside the base, they go to this, allegedly there's a house, and I've seen what it was claimed to be, and I will say that there's some odd activity around it. Every once in a while, you'll see a bunch of really nice cars around this house, right outside the base, and it's in the middle of the woods, and you just see like a bunch of like $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 cars lined up, and they'll sit there for a few days, and then they're just gone. And I always wonder if there's any truth to that Delta Force having a tunnel that they can just park it. And I was like, is that the house? You park it, scoot in, and it takes them right to the runway, apparently. But there's a lot of stuff, allegedly like deep underground military bases, and there's always a lot of like big construction going on throughout the area where like they could definitely move a lot of dirt if they wanted to and kind of get away with it. When they were building the overpass, I noticed there was like dump trucks leaving the base area full of dirt going to where they were dumping dirt to build this overpass. To me, I was like, why is there dirt coming out there when it's nowhere near the overpass? I thought that was kind of weird. I talked about, I called into a show a couple of days ago randomly, but I brought up an episode that, you ever heard of the show The $6 Million Man, where a test pilot, and they put him back together and make him like a cyborg, and he's the $6 Million Man. He does government missions and saves the day. There was an episode where he fights Bigfoot, played by Andre the Giant. And you always see the clip of him. It's always hokey. He's like punching Bigfoot. I was like, I like watching quirky things. So I was like, I'm going to watch that episode. I've never seen this show, and I got to watch this Bigfoot episode. What's it about? The plot of that episode was aliens crash landed on Earth near Mount Shasta. They took up residence inside the tunnels of Mount Shasta and made robot Bigfoots to gather equipment and people they need to build their spaceship to get out of here. And I was like, whoa, buddy, this explains a lot of shit.
Like, of course it's Mount Shasta.
Of course it's Mount Shasta. I was like, this plot's insane. This is an insane story, guys. It's like, what is that, though? Like, who would have came up with that in the 70s or 80s, whatever it was?
Well, did you see the footage that I think came out maybe last year of a rock climber who recorded this door shutting and becoming taut with the rock formation in mountain?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, I'm going to have to find the link and throw it in the show notes. Basically, there was a rock climber and he is recording his descent down Mount Shasta. And there is this giant door, and it's not in the door of the traditional sense like you're thinking. It's basically this rock that comes out and moves back in, almost like it's moving back into place.
Wow. Makes you think.
It certainly does. I do wonder if you did see some sort of reverse engineer test craft.
Now, at the time, I fully believed, around that time, there was a long period of time I fully believed like the Bob Lazar story about S4 and reverse engineering. I come to not believe that because I had a friend of mine named Steve Cambion on Truth Seekers, and watch his channel. He does exposés, and then he really blew the bubble on Bob Lazar for me. So like, I'm hesitant to say like whether or not something could be reverse engineered, because I just haven't seen enough. Like, I haven't had good evidence to suggest that like we have it and we've been able to reverse engineer anything. Although there is like, I guess, enough stories, but I don't know. With stuff like that, I do always kind of like to associate people with building stuff just naturally. Like whenever people say like aliens built the pyramids, I don't want to give aliens credit for that. Like, maybe we did it. Like, maybe we're just that good. We're pretty good. But
maybe reverse engineer isn't the right word, but something man-made. Because I think we're in that age of disclosure now where we're finding out a lot of this stuff was ours. It was secret military testing.
Yeah. I'm also really big into the theory, too, of the airship mysteries of the 1890s and 1800s. And the, what was it called? The, escape my head. There was an air club back then. I can't remember the name. Nimsy, I think it was called. It was an air club out of Belgium or Dutch. But basically, the conspiracy is that there was a breakaway civilization that took place in the early nights from these people who created these airships, which weren't, they're never described as being lighter than aircraft. They're described as being proper spaceships that have controlled flight. And there was reports all back in those early 1890s and 1880s of these things landing, and just a guy gets out and he just needs some water, and he just kind of hangs out for a minute. He's very open. He tells him everything that's going on, and he gets back in and he drives off. Like, when sometimes I think the UFO thing is just a distraction to break away from, or to take away from, a possible breakaway civilization that could have taken place 100 or so years ago. Because I don't trust people, and I could see enough people getting together going, we got something good here, let's get out of here. I don't know if that's always been the connection with it, but since I think the flat earth and Tataria stuff, which I think there's a grain of truth, and I think it is extra land, I think that is what like they're kind of trying to keep secret. I don't know if that was connected later on or not, but I do think there is some extra land. Like, I think that is part of the cover up. Again, I don't believe in flat earth or Tataria as a whole, but I think there is some grain of truth in there somewhere. I like them for the critical thinking aspect of it. Like, I like being presented theories like that to kind of go, okay, well, let's give it a shot. Like, why not? I got nothing but time here.
Right. Well, and so with the airship mystery, does that have anything to do with the blimps and why there's no more blimps?
You know what? I've always wanted to, I'm a big fan of blimps. Like, you're talking about proper, like, helium airships, like Zeppelins.
I was curious if the aircraft you were describing were blimps, because I've heard when you get into that extra land theory and the Tartaria arguments, I've heard that the reason why is that they have tried to make it seem like blimps are bad because they're the most practical use of travel. But I've heard that that's why they've demonized blimps and they had these things happen because we'd be traveling more, we'd be seeing these extra lands.
And the thing about blimp that it offers opposed to other travels is that there's a casualness to it. There's not a speed aspect of it. Like, we live in a world now that's been designed to get from point A to point B as efficiently, as fast as possible. Blimps offered this nice scenic, hey, we want to take our time. We're just going with the flow. We could show up today, tomorrow, who knows? And I think that was part of it, because at that same time was the drive away from public transportation into automobiles. Everyone should have automobiles. And that was, it's debatable, but I would say that that was probably a bad thing to kind of push away from, especially in cities, kind of denouncing public trans. And so, like, yeah, there might be something to that where they just didn't want that mode of travel to kind of pick up. Because then maybe that technology, too, would have led to whatever they were developing in the early 1890s. So maybe they were just like, let's just get a move away from that entirely. I want to say a lot of the airship theorists say that it's some sort of like red mercury, like fueling system that is what's powering it's up. It's creating some sort of anti-gravity field around these old ships. But I find that interesting. Good. It kind of, the blimps were definitely demonized. Helium wasn't there was another lighter than air that they used opposed to helium, but there was some shortage of it during that time when the Hindenburg went down and they used helium on the Hindenburg. And that's what, and who did I just talk to recently who talked about going out there to the Hindenburg site? And they said that they went, it was only a few days. It was around the anniversary, like within a few days. And they said the weather was exactly the same as it was on the date of the Hindenburg. And they said it was like, you could feel the electricity in the air just in that open field. So it was kind of like almost it was destined. Maybe. Walter Bosley is a great source for him. He's got a channel on YouTube, Walter Bosley channel. He's a great source. Pretty cool guy. I've only kind of exchanged a few messages here and there with him, but he's a fun dude. He's really into, like, he has a whole conspiracy video on the carousels at Disney World, that they were part of some sort of like machinery, like a spirit machinery created by the people who designed Disney World. It's a fascinating doc. I don't know, you know, but it's a good watch. I enjoyed it.
Some things to know about airships and blimps. They competed with the airplane monopoly and they didn't rely on the Rockefeller petroleum. Travel was spacious and free of air sickness and they could go safely nearly anywhere.
Yeah.
I love that. And it says the controllers wanted radium necessary for helium to remain out of sight.
Yeah. And there was a lot of infrastructure was being built when they stopped with the blimps. Like the top of the Empire State Building is a blimp terminal. That's what it originally was designed to be.
It has to deal with advanced old world technology. And that just fascinates me. I love all of the old world talk. I just find it incredibly fascinating.
Well, yeah. And I love like Graham Hancock's work. So I read like The Sign of the Seal. What was the other one he did? I just put up all my books, so I don't have them. But his kind of theories on the Younger Dryas impact, like he kind of suggests that there was a advanced civilization prior to that. And that always fascinates me, too, that like there is some old world technology that's been either hidden or forgotten.
Now, what got you specifically into the world of Bigfoot?
Well, oddly enough, I was almost out of the world of Bigfoot. I had hiked 500 miles on the AT. And right when I started, I said, I'm going to be spending a lot of time in these woods. I'm going to be sleeping in these woods. If I don't see a Bigfoot, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to, I'll have fun with it, fine, but like, I'm done with it. And I did. I walked 500 miles. I slept out for like a month and a half outside. I never had any strange experiences until I looked back on things, knowing what I knew later on. But so after I finished that, I was really like, okay, well, Bigfoot's a myth. Like, I was in the woods for a long time. I'd never seen them. And even prior to that, I did a stint in the military and I was infantry. We spent tons of time in the field, a month here, a month there, where you're just out in tents, walking around through the woods. So I was very familiar with the outdoors and I thought I'd seen a pretty good chunk of it. And it wasn't until I came back here to North Carolina and I lived fairly close to that Uwari National Forest and I started going out there hiking. And the first thing that happened to me that made me stop and think was, I showed up there one morning. It was early. I was the only person at the trailhead. I get out of my truck And right as I walk onto the trail from like the gravel road, there's a little sign that says like, oh, next road crossing 1.2 miles, you know, cross. I'm standing there, I'm just kind of reading it. And I was kind of pulling out my phone to take a picture of it. And a little pebble hit me right on the chest. Kind of boop. I looked around and the woods are fairly sparse out there. They do a controlled burn every year. So the floor, it's not as thick as it is in other spots of that forest. Like the bushes kind of always stay cleared out. And the trees are fairly sparse because it's long pines out there. I'm looking around. I can see 100 yards around me. I mean, those trees in between us all, but like I can see, like I'm looking around. And then as I'm looking around, I hit another one, just pops right on my chest and falls to the ground. And I look down. I go, well, it must be squirrels up in the trees dropping these things. Like I'm just imagining them coming from the side. But like, so I start looking up and I'm listening. And then another one just comes in and flicks me right on the stomach. But this time I saw it like coming in from the side, like coming straight sideways and hitting me. I look up, I didn't see nothing. And I spent probably another couple minutes there just looking around, and at this point, I wasn't even thinking Bigfoot. I didn't know what I was thinking. I was just kind of like, well, this is odd. But I said, I got to go. I got to go hiking. So I went out and had a normal weekend, came back. And then it's probably a few weeks after that, my brother came up and we went hiking this section and we camped down. It was called Dutchman's Creek Trail. But there was a, when you leave out of Yates Place camp, about a mile and a half, there's a nice little campsite down there around the creek. And we were sitting down there, and about midnight, we decided to go put it in for the night. And we always put a big log on the campfire to like, so there's some ambers in the morning, so you can like get the fire going quick. So I break this big log over the tree, and a couple seconds go by, then I hear a knock on top of a mountain to the north of us. We both look up there, then a few moments go, like a very short moment goes by, maybe 3-4 seconds, then another knock to the south of us, and then another 3-4 seconds go by, and then there was a loud knock 30 yards away from us down in the valley of the creek that we're in. Like you just hear it. It's like straight ahead of us, just in the darkness. And we start hitting it again. And that same sequence would go off and the one closest would keep moving around, but it always stay out of our sight, but it would just keep moving around. The whole experience lasted about 30 minutes. After about the first 5 minutes, I decided to tell my brother, like, well, you knock on the tree and I'm going to go walk where that close one's at. And I had a headlamp on. So I turned it off. I said, I'm going to walk out there in the dark and you keep knocking. And then when this thing close to us, like knocks, I'm going to whip my head and turn the light on and I'll see it. I'll see a Bigfoot. Because at this point I had started listening to Sasquatch Chronicles mostly for fun, but like I enjoyed it. I found it really intriguing. So I knew that this was like a Sasquatch type incident going on here. And I tell you what, I went out there and this thing always stayed. I never saw it. It always stayed right out of my sight to the point where like this thing would get within 15 yards of me. Within a second, I turn my head, flip my light on, and it'd be nothing there. And I would never hear anything move position. I never heard anything like, I thought maybe it's throwing rocks at trees and I'm not seeing it. But I never heard no rocks hit the ground after hitting the tree, nothing. And so I couldn't explain that. And that kind of like started like fueling the fire. But I always said at that point, I said, if there was a legend of like a Native American ghost that did that, like knocked on trees, I would believe that then because I didn't see no Bigfoot. It wasn't until like a few months later, I went and I would take my weekends off. I had long weekends back then. I worked construction, so I'd have 3 or 4 days. And I would go to different parts of the park and I would hike the different trails. I would just do a different one every weekend until I knocked them all out. And I was in this one section and had a nice hike all day. I ended up going up around the side of a mountain and I came back down. I hit the Uwari River and I camped right alongside the Uwari River and had a nice camp out. And that morning I got up. I had about 6 o'clock and I headed out about 6:30. And as I'm walking out of there, I come across this other campsite that was off a gravel road. And there was an older couple. One had a pickup truck, one had a car, and they were panicking, throwing stuff into the truck. Like they were throwing all their gear just in the truck. And this is like a Sunday, Saturday morning. Like there's no reason to be rushing out. I didn't think much of it. I walked right by them and they gave me like a weird look. And I was like, okay, whatever. I ended up walking down this gravel road. I had parked along it, where the park kind of opens up at. So I'm walking and this car pulls up next to me and it's the old lady. And she goes, hey, were you the guy running down the mountain last night? And I went, no. I was like, what do you mean? Like, running down the mountain. It's like, we had some guy, he did it 3 or 4 times, come running down from that mountain, past our campsite to the river. And then he go back up and did it 3 or 4 times. I was like, well, did he have a headlamp on? They're like, no. I'm like, what did it look like? And that the woman's husband pulled up behind her and honked the horn. And she just said it was dark. So I don't know if she meant like, it was too dark to see or the figure was dark. But as soon as he pulled off, I looked back in that mountain and it was the same one I had kind of hiked up along the side of the day before. And I said, I'm going to come back here as soon as I can. I'm going to camp up at the top of that mountain. So I think it was like a day or two, a hurricane was coming through. That's why I was kind of heading out. I was actually going to try to stay there for the hurricane. Kind of crazy. The park ranger told me I had to go. He was like, we got to shut this thing down. You got to go. So as soon as that hurricane came through, I basically followed it out. And I went back to that same spot and I started hiking up. I took the bridle trail that I took the day before, but I just took a different cut that went up to the nearer. It was a trail that was nearest to the top of it. I knew I was going to have to bushwhack to get to the top of the mountain. So when I got close enough to the top of the mountain, I cut off the trail and I came across this like teepee structure. And it was like your classic Bigfoot teepee structure. Like I checked for like if these trees had the roots in the, they weren't. They were all brought in and stacked up. And there was probably about four or five of them. I took pictures of it. I saw that. And then something caught my eye at the top of the mountain where it was like a line of small sapling trees and they were all broken off and about 8.5 feet, 9 feet tall. I went, okay. So I started walking that way. And when I got up there, I saw an old rotten log on the ground that had a big chunk taken out of it. And it was fresh. Like I said, that hurricane blew through. So like the ground was all like reorganized from that storm. But so this wood chunks like piqued my interest. I said, oh, this happened after the storm. It would have been kind of faded in. And right where it looked like something had hit its foot on this log. And then it came down with a big step, like it kind of stumbled into it. And I got this perfect Bigfoot footprint. I mean, it was like, it was it. I was like, oh, wow, it's a Bigfoot. And then there was like two more past it, but none of them were as clear. Like that one looked like it literally just like came down hard on it. Then it kind of softened up on the rest. And I put up my camp right next to that footprint. And I just stayed there the whole night and nothing. I didn't hear nothing. It wasn't until the next morning I got up and I packed everything up. And I was just kind of sitting there with my coffee. Then I heard something huff at me from some bushes down kind of in this draw area. And I looked over there. And for some reason, my brain just kind of went, okay, didn't think about it. I didn't think about it again until I got out of that mountain. I literally opened up the trunk of my car. And as soon as I put the bag in, I said, why didn't I hang out after I heard that huff? Like I looked for a deer or something. I didn't see nothing. And I was like, okay. But it was as if someone cut off like my thinking process for that. It was just kind of like, I can't explain that. And maybe I'm just stupid. Like maybe my brain was just like, let's get out of here. But to me, I was like, it's so odd that it wasn't until the moment I opened my trunk and threw my bag in, that's when it clicked back in and go, why didn't you check out that huff, that like weird like snort that you heard? And I don't know. But that was really what then got me back into like, okay, something's going on here. I'm no longer like, it's not in the myth category anymore. Like I'm running into people who are running into this thing. And I'm just kind of like near. So like, who's faking this? No one's faking this person and then tricking me. And then I'm coming up here and finding footprints where I'm expecting them to be, you know. That was the other weird thing too. I was like, for some reason, I was so certain. I was like, I'm gonna get up to this mountain. I'm gonna find some sort of evidence that there's Bigfoot up there. And I did. I don't know what that is though. You know what I mean? There was somewhere where they talked about like, it was Halloween night and they drove out to some field. Just like, let's joke around. Let's see if we see Bigfoot. And there was one just out there. They just drove right up to it. So I don't know. It's odd.
What size do you think the footprint you found was?
I want to say it would have been around like 15 inches long. I got some pictures. I'll pop them over to you. Yeah, it was like your classic, probably 15, 16 inches. And then it was, I put my foot next to it. I got kind of small feet. They're 9.5. And it just dwarfed mine. I mean, it was huge. But what really struck me was how broad out it was. And it wasn't like the leaves were pushed away either. It was like something heavy enough to compact the leaves down into it and still made like, you could still see the toes and stuff in there. It was interesting.
It wasn't until you got back to your car that your brain kind of clicked in. And I don't think that we give enough credit to those moments where, say, you forget your car keys and it takes you an extra 5 minutes to leave the house that day. And you're mad because you're late going to work. And really, you pass an accident on your way there that just happened. If you would have been 5 minutes sooner, that could have potentially been you involved with it. So I think that there's these moments that we can't explain where you saw it and maybe it was self-preservation and your brain protecting you in that moment. Because if you realized maybe what was happening to the fullest of extents, who knows what would have happened? Would you have freaked out? Would you have been scared? Would you have tried to go fight Bigfoot? I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe it kept you out of a really bad situation. But it wasn't until your bag's in your car that your brain's like, okay, now we can let him in on what just happened.
And that's probably the most likely scenario is probably what happened.
Or did something make you not care about it? And then by the time you got to your car, it wore off. Did it play mind games with you?
Yeah. Because when I initially heard it, it had my full 100% attention. I was like, oh, I finally heard something. And I kind of walked over there. I looked, and part of me was like, well, it was like a snort, like an animal, like kind of Like you could really hear it. And I'm looking for a deer, but then like there's no deer. I would have seen a deer or something. I would imagine, especially if it's snorting at me, it wants to make itself known. But yeah, then it was like all of a sudden, it's just like, yeah, I was just like, okay, let's go. I'm good. But yeah, as soon as I got to the car, I went, you came up here for this whole reason. And then when you finally get something, I just, that is, it's unlike me, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe that was my first time out. So maybe it just, yeah.
Well, I'm sure those experiences probably really catapulted you into wanting to go out more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It definitely put me to focus on paying attention more to things like that, particularly with the tree structures out there. That's a common thing out there that you kind of come across. Well, I won't say common, but it's like it's something that it's one of the things about Yuari and the Bigfoot associated with it is tree structures and vocalizations. That's like the two big heavy things, and roadside crossings. That's a classic up there. The one thing that I saw with my own eyes, and this was the freakiest thing. I still can't believe this happened. Halloween night, again, I don't know why it keeps being brought up. I was like, I'm going to go sleep in this cemetery. It's called Bingham Graveyard. It's in the middle of the woods. So it'd be a great Halloween experience. I'll just go set up my hammock and sleep. I get out there. I took the long way around. It's on this loop trail that's about 8 miles. So I took like the long way around. So about 6 miles. So the next morning, I'd only have like 2 miles to walk out. So I enjoy it. Have a lovely hike. I set up my hammock near the graveyard. I'm just kind of chilling in it. I'm watching the sunset. And it's where the graveyard was put. It's all overgrown now. And there's like, it's unmarked. There's just stone markings for the graves. I think it was the old plantation graveyard because the homestead is up there on that mountain too. I'm just sitting there and I'm taking night exposure pictures of the sunset. And the whole time I'm looking over to my right where I come in from the trail and I see, to me, it's a headlamp. I go, it's another hiker. And it must be lost because there was actually a Boy Scout camp if you take another trail not too far. And they were kind of, the light was kind of near that area. So I'm like, they must be wondering where, maybe they're looking for the graveyard. Maybe they're, you know, I don't think nothing of it. So I'm snapping these pictures and this light's just kind of up there on this little embankment or this little kind of hilltop over here. And then here's where it gets kind of weird. Then I look back over at that light and I see an orangish one with it too. And I started thinking in my head, it popped out like those emergency orange lights you see on like vehicles. And I thought, well, maybe somebody just, that's the only headlamp they had was like some weird orange thing. You see that out there, people just coming out with what they got. And that's fine. And so again, I didn't think about it. Then I go back over, I'm taking my pictures. And then I finally see this blue light start coming down towards me. I don't see the orange one at all anymore. It's just gone. And I think it's the hiker coming in to say hi to me. So I get up out of my hammock. I put my phone away because I don't want to be filming them or anything. And I got my headlamp on. I start walking towards them. And when I get to about 15 feet away from them, I turn my headlamp off and I look up at them. And it's just this orb. There's no one there. And it's just this orb standing right there in front of me. And I get the sense it's looking at me. Like it's acknowledging me at least. It stopped when I ran into it. And it just floated there in front of me. Then it started taking off to my left. And going down this old dirt road. And then maybe within 20 yards, it just had just faded away. It just kind of like got a little bit lighter, and then just kind of faded away completely. I have no clue what that is. And I went up to that thinking fully it was a hiker. I was expecting to have a chit chat, or you lost or something. But I still can't explain it. And what it looked like was, do you remember that Norwegian spiral video? There was a video, if you want to look it up, just so you get like a cursory look of it. That's what it looked like, but it was the size of maybe a baseball, a little bit smaller maybe too. But there was this like dark hole in the very center and it had the spiral look to it like the orb did. I didn't know what that was. And then I still don't know what that was. I've looked more into like the Bigfoot orbs theories. And I don't know what to say about that because I'd never seen a Bigfoot orb. But I never seen a Bigfoot turn into an orb. So I can't say an orb is a Bigfoot. But I definitely got a sense that it was some sort of intelligence moving through there, whether it's a ghost or a spirit. Like I said, it's a graveyard. Halloween night. I know that sounds hokey and like too good to be true, but I swear that's what happened.
As far as it happening on Halloween, I don't think we get to plan when certain things happen to us, but I will say, and they've said it for years, that the veil is a little bit thinner on October 31st. So who's to say that you didn't walk into your own anomaly?
Yeah. And that was the freakiest thing about it. I wish I had someone filmed me, because if you ever want to see me jaw dropped, that was like the moment. That was the most jaw dropped I've ever been. I literally went from like, hey, how you doing? To like processing, I'm looking at something, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know what this, I have no clue what's happening right now. And it looks so weird out in the forest too. It's just this light, you know. And now I've seen other strange light anomalies in the forest. There was a time I had seen some like luminescent fog that was rolling. I thought it was the moonlight lighting it up. And then as I'm looking at it, it was rolling over this hill and kind of going down the hill. It was like a fog of its own light. There was no moon. Like, that's what tripped me out. I looked up, it has to be a full moon or something. And it wasn't. It was like a fog that was just self-luminescent moving through the forest. Like, I don't know what that is either.
Well, in your introduction, you said that you take reports of high strangeness from that area. Are there other people reporting similar things to what you have seen?
People do report strange lights out there, orbs moving through the forest. There's even a legend of a ghost town that appears and disappears randomly throughout the Uwari. It's not in like a set location. But a lot of it is your kind of your standard Bigfoot stuff. It's somewhat aggressive, not in the physical sense, but almost every story is something coming close to camp, roaring or growling or snorting to intimidate you. And usually the dogs, if you have a dog, it's going to cower away. It's going to dip out, no matter how brave of a dog it is anywhere outside that situation. That's usually most of the reports that you hear from that area. And there's really no set location. Although I will say, like, people are telling me now, like, the north and middle end seems very active, whereas maybe the southern end was more active like 10 years ago. But there's definitely a lot of reports of like high strangeness out there, just strange activity in general. OS, a lot of UFO sightings in that area. Actually, I have a friend who didn't tell me for a long time, but then he later came out and told me that he told me about a UFO sighting. He'd left out a part about missing time. And then he told me he always kind of thought that, like, coming out to the woods camping, that maybe like they're come visit again. I don't know why he did that with me out there with him. Like, I don't want to have this, and I don't want to meet these things. But I mean, you could have told me that, man.
Because talking about being a marked individual, if potentially your friend was abducted, they, from what I've heard, do keep an eye on abductees.
Yeah.
And that they typically will have either a period of time or be lifelong visited by these visitors, whomever they may be.
Yeah.
And he waits to tell you.
I've known him for months and all this, and knowing the story too. He just never leaves out the best part. And he's not the first one to do that to me. There's actually another guy I know. I went camping with him for the first time. My father passed away like a year ago, and I went up there to Pennsylvania for the funeral. I hooked up with a camper and with a guy that he was a subscriber on my hiking channel back when I had one. And he same thing. He was like, I have experiences with aliens out in the forest all the time. So just heads up. And I was like, what? I'm like, what do you mean, like, all the time?
Define
all the time. With guests around, they show up too.
That's really interesting about the ghost town too, because when you said iridescent fog, my mind went to ghostly paranormal activity.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of ghost stuff like that, like ghost trains, ghost ships, and ghost towns. Like, those things fascinate me. So yeah, that one, you don't hear much about that legend, but it is like a legend that's out there. I find it interesting. For sure.
How these things correlate too. That's something that we talk about a lot on this show, is how Bigfoot, the paranormal, this high strangeness, they all blend together and they seemingly are all part of the same strange, weird world. And that these things tend to overlay and are compounded.
There's something too. I go out there and I do try to keep I'm a big fan of Star Trek: The Next Generation, and particularly like Captain Picard, because he kind of taught me like to handle things. It's all about communication and diplomacy. Like, that's what we're trying to do here. It's not. So I try to like go in with a mindset of that. Like, and that's where really my interest in with Bigfoot. I'm not interested in proving it to anybody. I would just like to find some way of communicating with whatever this is on the other side, whether it's Bigfoot, Dogman, whatever, orbs. Like, I think it'd be endlessly fascinating to actually be able to communicate in some capacity with this stuff, because they have they have answers, you know?
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I want to give, you know, people a platform to come and share their experiences. And maybe through that, people can open their minds and realize that there are things happening to other people that are unexplainable. And maybe it hasn't happened to you yet, but it might.
Yeah.
And
from what I've experienced, everybody's had some sort of supernatural paranormal experience, whether it's easier for them to admit, but like, everyone has had something. Like, I just don't believe it, because I have too many people who go, no, I've never had anything weird happen. And then after knowing them for a year, they go, but one time after my grandmother died, I did get this phone call that sounded like it's from, it's like, well, yeah, that's something weird. Like, that is something. Like,
what sets different people apart is some people have experiences and then other people have a calling. And I think you wind up getting called to this, called to go out and research and figure out what's going on. And it's more, it can even be like an inner calling of, I need to know, like Fox Mulder, I want to believe. And then
now you're out there doing your own independent research just to make sense of the different experiences that you've had and heard other people are having.
Yeah. And just trying to find some sort of anything, a pattern. How does this work? Is it the spot moving around where this stuff happens at? Like, how does all this kind of correlate?
Potential migratory habits, or are they phasing in and out of our reality? It's all very interesting.
I've always been a flesh and blood. I was a flesh and blood person for a long time. Until at some point, I just couldn't explain it anymore. I was like, no, these things they're flesh and blood for some period of time. And there was some interview with somebody who said that they were looking at one. He said it like this, and I love this. This is the best phrasing I ever heard. He goes, I was looking at it, and it was over there. And then at some point, it was somewhere else, but I didn't see it anymore. And I'm like, that's kind of what it does. Like, it seems to.
Very true. I can attest to that myself with what I've seen. So that leads me to wonder, is there portal activity potentially happening out in the Huari? Because when I hear these stories of UFOs, orbs, light anomalies, paranormal things happening, and Bigfoot, that usually are indicators that there is a portal somewhere in there. Have you heard any reports of that?
But you know what's interesting? And I was already a subscriber to Hellbent Holler at this point, but they had filmed something. I think it was in their Equinox series, or no, it was in the Burning Light series. And what they had filmed was something like orange glowing in the woods. And when I saw that, what clicked was that when I glanced over there and saw that orange light for a moment, it was very similar to what they had filmed. And they had interpreted it as being some sort of possible portal. That's where I guess our paths kind of crossed a little bit more, because then I was like, okay, they filmed something that was very similar to what I seen. And whether that's a portal or not, yeah, I don't know, but I'm definitely open to it, because whatever that was going on up there, it led to some weird stuff that I can't explain that's like in my reality. Yeah. If portals are real, then I think that is something that's going on out there.
Well, while we're talking about Hellbent Holler, I think we would be remiss if we didn't discuss the documentary. What can you tell us about this project?
This one, it's a powerhouse right there. This is the first time I ever met Hellbent Holler in person. I hadn't been subscribers and like chit-chat with them for a few years prior to this. But I got a report, and it was a video. I got a two-minute video right after the incident happened. And it was a friend of mine who was camping in middle of nowhere up there. And he recorded some very intriguing vocalizations, very loud, persistent. And like I said, in this documentary, you'll see the full 2 minute video. And I got that in about 4 o'clock in the morning. This happened around like sometime between midnight and 3, I think. And so I got the video, and as soon as I got it, I was like sleeping. I got it. And I don't normally do this. I instantly just send it. I don't like holding on to something case it disappears, and then like I didn't do anything to get it out there. So I just shot it over to Hellbent Holler, and as soon as day broke, I got a text from them like, oh, can you tell us a bit about this? And I told them, and then it was like we hit the ground running. Within just like 2 weeks, they had started a full 2 month investigation stemming from just that audio. And they allowed me to join in. I got to meet them one weekend, and it was really just going to be like an interview, and they were going to talk to me for a minute. And we just hit it off so well. I just hung out with them whenever I could over the course of this 2 months and showed them around different spots. And they really got in there, and they really captured something that I've never seen on any other documentary ever put out. Like there's like what this documentary has that others don't is some sort of, it actually answers a question at the end. Like there is some finality, there's some closure to it, but there's still a cliffhanger at the end, but there is actually some closure to it. Like they track down something, like they track it down. It happens. But during that whole process, though, there was experiences of high strangeness that wasn't Bigfoot related that we all experienced, too. So, yeah, it goes beyond just Bigfoot. Although in this documentary, it's just Bigfoot. We're just focusing on that. But we definitely had a lot of wild experiences out there.
I can't wait to watch it. It's by Small Town Monsters, and it's called Bigfoot the Monster on Morris Mountain.
Yeah.
Nice.
Great name.
Where can people find that?
It'd be on the Small Town Monsters channel.
On YouTube?
On YouTube, yeah. And then I think after that, it goes up on different, different platforms will have it.
If someone has a sighting in the North Carolina region, should they reach out to you? Do you want to plug anything for people to reach you if they potentially have something happen out in the URI?
If people want to get hold of me, I'm kind of specific to URI region. You can send me an email of your encounters to strangeurienconters@gmail.com. and I'll be happy to hear you out. Yeah, I usually do. Like if I get a report in there and it's recent, I'll go out there. I'll look around. Absolutely. Because I mean, that seems to be, I think that's why Halpin Holler had such success finding what they found, was just the speed of which, and then they get in there. Like I you know, when you meet like different people in this field, you're not sure like to what level are they actually going to go. Like, are you guys going to do some crazy stuff? Like, are we going to get bit by copperheads? Like, are we down for this? And they are 100% down. We spent hours out in like collapsed mine shafts filming, Nate Gators on. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, and then Jesse Joel is the one that directed it, and she edited it. She did a phenomenal job because she had to take like 40 hours of footage. And I mean, can you think we have like four cameras running the entire time? There's thermal, there's audio too. You have to go through a lot of audio, and to compress that all down to 90 minutes. I mean, she made a banger of a documentary. It's incredible. It's so fast paced, but it captured like that feel of it. Like, I know 2 months seems like a long time, but it really was. Like, it went by so fast. Because every weekend we get out there, and there was always something going on to pursue, you know. And if there wasn't, then we go to a different spot and try to look for something else. Like, we were just always moving around. So that was great.
I can't wait to watch that. Well, everybody needs to be sure to check that out, and definitely check out Hellbent Holler too. They are some fantastic great researchers. And if you're not familiar with their work, I would highly, highly recommend looking them up.
I told them there's no one else I would have gone to with this information, like with the information I get. I especially now, I know that they put the work in, like they really look into it. So yeah, they're great. And they're a hoot too. We have a couple good laughs out there, you know?
I think that's important. You have to have fun doing this, or else we wouldn't be able to stay sane.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I can't wait for everyone to see it. Can you believe that car chase in it?
There's a car chase?
Maybe. Check it out.
Oh my gosh. Okay, now I'm hooked. I'm in. I love a good car chase.
That's the hook we got you. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the ending of that documentary is really, it's great. It's something I'm really proud of to be a part of it, because I really do think it's, I'm really like nitpicky. I'm a film buff, so I'm like really cynical, like in a, like people don't like me talking about movies. But as far as like Bigfoot documentaries go, it's top tier. It's up there. My favorite one of all time up to maybe now was The Legend of Boggy Creek. And I know that's like kind of a cliche answer to say, but like, that movie really works. It functions well as like both a documentary, and then with the reenactments, building that narrative too and showing it. Like, I don't think any Bigfoot documentary has ever done anything close to that. And in this one, we don't do reenactments, of course, but I think it holds all that same thrills and drama that like Boggy Creek has. But this time it's like a true investigative documentary. Like, it's just pure. There's no reenactments, nothing like that. It's just like, we're just hitting the ground running. That's what I love about it the most.
I can't wait to check it out. Just want to say a big thank you to coming on. I know that we have exchanged some emails and stuff, and it's been fantastic. And I'm glad we were able to get you on here to actually talk about your stories and tell us about your experiences. So thank you again.
Thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That's all for tonight's Journey into the Strange. A huge thank you to my guest, Michael Kirkpatrick, for sharing his encounters and insights, and to Small Town Monsters and Hellbent Holler for bringing the story of the monster of Morris Mountain to life in their brand new documentary. If you haven't watched it yet, it's streaming now on YouTube, and it's a must-see for anyone who loves cryptids and mysteries. If you enjoy Dark Florida, don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/darkflorida411. And you can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And if you have a story of your own, Bigfoot, UFOs, ghosts, or anything in between, send me an email at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And who knows, you might be the next guest on the show. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange. And remember, Florida isn't the only place where mysteries walk among us.